Hey, what's up, Blazer fans? Welcome to We Have a Take the What podcast. I am Tara Bowen-Biggs, joined as always by Rose Harding. Hello, Rose.
Hello, Tara. How are you?
I am great. We are recording this on New Year's Eve, December 31st. Are you ready for 2024?
Yes. No. Yes. Probably. I don't know.
Okay.
Yes, I am. I am ready for 2024.
Yes. But now we're looking at 2024. Our episode for today, we are going to do a little bit of looking back at 2023. But I have to tell you why I'm extremely excited about 2024. I can barely contain my excitement because in just a week, I will be in New York City getting ready to watch the Blazers play the Knicks and the Nets. I am so excited to go on this trip and see the Blazers in the Big Apple. I can't even wait. It means that we're not going to have a podcast next week. We've sort of been in an every other week thing for a while. Kind of goes along with the whole, like, we're just going to like sort of relax this season.
Yeah.
Have sort of low casual expectations.
Yeah, and December is hard. It's like, you know, every other weekend, it seems like there's like a holiday, or for me, my kid's birthday was in December. Like basically everything for me between Thanksgiving and New Year's is like run to the next holiday.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yes.
But I am very excited for you to be in New York because you're going to get to eat. And eating in New York is one of my all-time favorite things. Because it's very, like, the food is very different than the types of food that we have on the West Coast. I don't want to say it's better, because I don't think that's necessarily true. But certain types of food, certain types of, like, food from, like, different, like, ethnic communities is way better in New York. Now, granted, like, if you want, like Mexican food or, like, South American food, like, West Coast is the place to be. I'm sorry, it just is. But, like, there's other, like, if you want, like, great Indian food is in New York. Like, there's a lot of really great food that, like, you just... I don't know. It's like hard to appreciate that we don't have as much of it as like some of the other cities where like there's just more of like those communities have been there for longer.
I'm excited. I've been dropping pins in all the places that you have been suggesting, and everybody in the group chat has been sending me recommendations. And we don't have many plans except for we're going to go see a Broadway show. We're going to see Spamalot, which is going to be perfect for my husband. And then we're going to go to the two games. He's never been to New York City. I haven't been to New York City since I was 18 years old. And so I'm not sure that he's prepared for how different it's going to be from the West Coast. And like, I was thinking about like, oh my gosh, what are we going to wear? Like, I know what I'm going to wear to the games. That's easy. But what do I wear to a Broadway show? Can I be like Portland, like typical casual, or do I have to like up my game? I don't know. I'm going to call my sister. She's going to come down from Syracuse with me. My sister from Syracuse is also going to go to her very first NBA game ever.
Yeah.
She's a big Jeremy Grant fan. And so she's going to go to the Nets game with us. And I am so excited for, I hope she has a great time. I mean, NBA games, like, are pretty much a fun time no matter what, especially like if you aren't heavily invested in the team, probably like maybe, I don't know, if you like really don't care whether or not somebody wins, it's just like sort of the atmosphere. So I have my Jabari Walker City Edition jersey, and hold me back and I will not go on my City Edition rampage. I have my Jabari Walker City Edition jersey, and I have my Shaedon Sharpe black jersey. So I've got it covered for what I'm going to wear to the Blazer games.
Wait, I have a question.
Yeah.
Do you have a Trendon Watford jersey?
I don't. I don't. But you know what I do have?
What?
I have the What Happens in Vegas Stays in... No, What Happens in Vegas Belongs to Portland Summer League Championship t-shirt, for which he was named the championship Summer League Championship MVP. So you better believe I'm bringing that with me to get that signed.
Yes, 100%. I was like, go get that thing signed. Also, yes. It's like, like it being the Summer League t-shirt is maybe even like better than you getting your jersey signed, because it's more on your brand.
Yes, and that's also MVP of the finals. So
yeah, that's right. Oh, God, that was simpler times.
Okay, I'm gonna go on my rant about the City League edition jersey anyway. Okay. Even though I said I wasn't going to. Okay, Jabari Walker, been with the Blazers for 2 years, part of the Summer League championship team. On the Blazers Rip City clothing website, you cannot find a Jabari Walker City edition jersey. They have it in, they have a Jabari Walker version on every other jersey edition. And so I'm led to believe that it's just simply an oversight. They just did not make a Jabari edition, City edition page. They have one for Rian Rupert. They have one for Robert Williams. They have one for everybody but Jabari Walker. And so I've been trying to very nicely tell the people at Rip City Clothing, could you please make a page? And it's like, they keep telling me, well, you don't have to pay extra for a player's jersey. And there's nowhere that I can find on there. The only way I could do it is I had to like have a whole back and forth with DMs with the guys so that they could create a special invoice for me. And it's like, but anyway, that's not the point. The point is Jabari Walker has been on the team for 2 years. And like, he should have a jersey. And it's pretty much, it's got to be like an oversight. And like, I don't want to even bring this up because I myself maintain websites and I know how horrible it is to feel that, like, realize like you didn't put something up or something should have been corrected or whatever. So like, I don't want to like call him out like, but it's like, come on. He's a Summer League champion and he's been on the team for 2 years. And he's also having, by the way, a magnificent year. And then every time they like highlight him in the graphics, he's wearing a City Edition jersey. So please,
that's really annoying.
Listening, I want to be super nice about it. I don't want to call anybody out about it because I know these things happen.
I'm like looking at the site right now while we're talking about it, and I just
check it every day.
I need to point out that we have a Rupert, City jersey, a
Robert Williams
City jersey. We have like. No.
Rose, they have a number 33 Tamani Kamara and number 35 Robert Williams, but they don't have Jabari Walker number 34. it's simply an oversight. And I just think I'm so happy and so excited for how well Jabari is playing. And I love how he's come on and he's like done so much with the minutes that he has been given. And I want to move on from this and not let it bother me anymore. So maybe getting it out will just, it'll just like tamp it down and I'll just chill. And it's like I said, you know, this, we're taking it easy this season. We're not getting worked up about stuff. Okay. So I'm done.
Can I tell you my small gripe about the City jersey?
What?
So I got my daughter a jersey for Christmas this year, because last year I got her a jersey for the first time and I got her a Dame jersey and he immediately got traded. So she never even got to go see him in person. Oh, and I felt horrible. I got her a Scoot Henderson jersey because she decided the Scoot is her favorite because they're both fast and wear glasses.
Oh, that's so cute. I love it.
But you can't get a custom youth City jersey on the site. You can get you can't even get a youth City. I couldn't really find a youth one for the City edition. You can get one from last year's City edition. Mm-hmm. You can get the carpet one custom made and a youth jersey, but you cannot get a youth jersey for the new City. And I'm like, guys, nobody wants the old City jersey this year. We want the new City jersey. Mm-hmm. Like, Scoot wasn't even on that team. I can't do that. I can't turn Scoot into last year's City jersey. Like, so she got the regular like away black jersey. It's a classic. Mm-hmm. But I would have bought the City jersey for my daughter because I got an Ayton jersey. Mm-hmm. That's in the new City, and then we could have matched, but no, couldn't make one for a youth.
Yeah, that's a bummer. Well, we are sure that as soon as they have a moment to spare, they will fix all of these things so that we can properly have an opportunity to buy what we want for our favorite players.
That's right.
Well, anything else you want to talk about what you're looking forward to in 2024 before we go through our exercise of reviewing 2023?
No. Let's just get into it. Let's look back on 2023, say goodbye, and move on.
Do you want to start?
Yes. So we are going to do an exercise, which we did last year for the new year, and we call it 3-2-1 2024 this year. And that's where we choose three things from the last year that we want to remember, three things or two things we want to forget, and then one thing we want to look forward to in 2024. And this is a way for us to look back on like what happened in the last calendar year and revisit those things. And some, for some of them, leave them in the past forever. So I will start. And this is goes back to something that I chose last year also, sort of, for something that I would like to remember. The first thing I would like to remember from 2023 was that the close to the Nurkic chapter in Portland was perfect. And I said the same thing about CJ last year, because I felt like the way CJ last year and this year Nurkic got to leave was like in the best situation possible, in the best way possible. Like they got to go to teams where they were wanted, where they had a great role and an opportunity to do something that wasn't like, you know, like exiling a guy to the Wizards or whatever. Like they got to go someplace where they were wanted, someplace where they had a role, they were going to play minutes. And they also like didn't have to have bad feelings about the franchise as on their way out the door. And so what I want to remember is how Nurkic had a perfect close to his chapter. And quite frankly, I got to be honest with you, Tara, I was a little nervous about when it was going to time for Nurkic to leave, because Nurkic does not always leave on the best terms.
Yeah, I mean, there was a real potential there for, I mean, he could have, you know.
Yes, he could have.
He could have made some noise on the way out. I mean, he sometimes would make a little noise in his end of season press conferences. But I think it was an indication of how well his representation handled things, especially compared to maybe some other ones that we watched. But he had strong representation that kept a lid on it without making it, you know, be like too dramatic. Like we weren't like all involved, like prior to the end of the season, has always been plenty of talk every year about whether Nurkic was going to stay and talk about his contract and blah, 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 blah. But it really did not dominate the conversation that it could have. And he could have said some other things. He also, you know, had a beautiful summer with his getting married and Anfernee Simons and his family traveling and some of the front office traveling. And we got to watch that on Instagram. And so I think that was also a cool part of it, is that they had sort of like some special time together.
And I was also pleased to see that, like, when I remember when there was pictures on social of his wedding, like Joe Cronin went to his wedding. He clearly was not on bad terms with the GM. Like, you know, there was like one moment, I think in the spring, it might have been right after the trade request, where someone tweeted like, oh, well, if we're going to trade Dame, we better be trading Nurkic. It was like kind of a mean way. And Nurk like quote tweeted them and he was like, oh, don't you worry. And I was like, uh-oh. But well, he did. That was all he said. And he never came back to it. And like when he came back through Portland, I wondered if he was going to throw an elbow at us, and he didn't. Mm-mm. He was like nothing but love for us. And I was like,
yeah,
we got a good close.
Yeah. Yeah. And that is worth a lot, especially, you know, so many of those Neil Olshey years, somebody would come to the Blazers and that would be their last stop, you know, and they would just, and so like, this was somebody who still had a lot of career left in him. And also just like considering how much we went through with him, with his injury and then like his delayed return and how badly we were wanting him to succeed. I'm going to cross my fingers that it's not that the Blazers don't play against Phoenix in the game that they get officially eliminated from the playoffs. So he doesn't have to tell us. So we have a nice summer.
I would love it if we didn't have to do that. You're right. That's something to hope for.
You know, have they already been eliminated? Maybe they've already been eliminated. Before I said that, as that was coming out of my mouth, I was like, oh gosh, maybe they've already been eliminated.
Well, I'll say this, people don't even really like you have to be close to getting into the playoffs for you to be eliminated from the playoffs, because nobody's tracking your magic number in like, you know, February or whatever.
I kind of want to now go figure that out.
Yeah, that's right. But I will say that like when he came through, he very easily could have done something that was rude. Mm-hmm. And you know how I told you that, like, I'll boo if Dame taps his wrist at us?
Yeah.
Like, there's definitely some stuff that Nurkic could have done that would have made me feel a little salty about it. But he didn't do any of that.
Yeah.
He came back with love. And I love that Mark Mason announced him in Bosnian one more time. Because, like, that's something that he hadn't done for any of the other visiting players when he used to announce them in their native languages. And it was nice to hear him do it for Nurk, because he never got a chance to do it for Nurk again, knowing that, like, he, you know, like, and same with Dame. He, like, those are guys that, like, he kind of announced, they, like, you know, they sat out the end of last season. Mm-hmm. And so he got to, like, say it one more time. Although I saw him post on Twitter that he had to learn how to say the number 20.
Oh, yeah.
Because he didn't know how to, because he wasn't announcing that number here.
Yeah. That's funny. Yeah. No, it was definitely all love when he returned. And it was fun to see him, you know, before the shoot around, like, messing around with all the guys. Okay. Shall I do mine?
Yes.
My first thing to remember, it was really hard because I wanted to, like, see what I could remember without actually going back and looking at stuff. Cause I was like, okay, I'll have to go back through my Twitter timeline or, like,
yeah,
go read, like, what was on Blazer's Edge during. But before I did that, I was like, what at all do I remember that I was excited about last season during the end of the season? Cause it was rough.
Yeah.
The thing that I kept coming back to, which, like, isn't really that remarkable, but I kept coming back to it, so I guess it's my thing, is that last season I didn't even have, like, a streaming service, because I was like, after everything started to fall apart, I was like, I'm not even going to bother paying, like, $90 a month to watch this. So I relied on the kindness of friends and going out to, like, bars to watch the game or whatever. And there was a new neighborhood bar, and I was walking by it one morning, and they had the biggest screen I've ever seen in my life on the wall. And I was like, ooh, I want to go watch a Blazer game there. So on March 22nd, I went and watched the game versus the Jazz, and there was nobody there. It was, like, me and the bartender and this giant, like, it is, like, the biggest screen I've ever seen in my life. Plus, like, a whole bunch of other TVs. And the guy was, like, the bartender was kind of making fun of me because I was watching the Blazer game, but I was like, you know, what am I going to do? And it happened to be a game that they won. It was a rare win at the end. I feel like it was one of the game, like, Shaden played 40 minutes, and it was like, and Damian Lillard actually played. It may have even been Damian's last game that he played. But I just remember thinking, oh, this is what it could be. This is what it could be, knowing that there's no way in the world this is what it was ever going to be. And I just remember enjoying that game, like, all by myself in this bar on this giant screen, and the bartender making fun of me, and me going, oh no, they're going to do it. Like, not even really believing it, but then they actually did it, and they ended up winning, I think, by a pretty good size margin. And I just kept thinking, it's going to evaporate. That lead's going to evaporate. But they did it. They pulled it out. Shaden had an awesome game. And it was, like, one of the best, like, chemistry games between Shaden and Dame. And it was like, I kind of knew while I was watching it, I think, that, like, this is kind of going to be it. it was a good memory.
It's also nice to have, like, a totally random win that wasn't necessarily, like, remarkable for any other reason, be, like, a nice memory. Because, like, it's really easy to forget those, right? But wins are always nice. Mm-hmm. And then just to have this, like, association with this one seemingly random win, like, feel really good. It's like, that's nice.
And then after that, it was like, okay, we got to shut everybody down. And that was when we just got, like, a parade of guys coming through, and we had to keep doing, like, get to know this guy. It's like, oh my god. I think our last one was, like, we did, like, six guys in our last one, because they were all new and they all had, like, you know, played two games with the team.
I was gonna say, like, that was part of the reason why I didn't take my daughter last year to see Dame. It's because I was, like, worried I would buy tickets and then he would be shut down, and then we wouldn't actually see him, and it would probably be more devastating for her to go and think she's going to, and then find out, like, the day of that she's not. And so I was, like, never really sure when to take her, and I was like, oh, I'll just wait till next season. Stupid me.
You bought tickets to the game where Dame returns, right?
Yeah, although I don't think I'm going to take her to that one, because like, I think she's still kind of building her, like, relationship with our team.
Yeah.
And I don't want to be like, well, here's your old favorite guy and here's your new favorite guy. And they're all on the same game together. So pick who you want to root for. I don't want it to be like that. I want it to be like something that's very straightforward.
Mm-hmm.
I also kind of want to take her to a game that's maybe not so like high stakes and is going to be so crazy. Because mm-hmm. my daughter is very sensitive to like noise and stuff. She has like some like auditory sensory stuff. And so I don't want it to be too overwhelming at first. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's probably a good idea. A remix game would be a really great introduction to going to a basketball game. Those are so nice because they don't have like all that like noise, like light and sound. It's just more like going to like a high school game. Mm-hmm. It's lovely.
And she still might see Scoot.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause he shows up to those games.
Yeah, a bunch of guys showed up to the game yesterday. I think I'm going to go to the game this afternoon, but I'm guessing I think the Blazers are flying out today, so I don't think there'll be any Blazers at the game. But I think that's really cool that they go to the remix games.
Mm-hmm.
I can't get over how much I love having the remix.
I kind of wonder if that's true for other teams or if that's just something that our team does. Because they're like our team is younger and mm-hmm. like, you know, a lot of them are like in their like first, second, third years in the league.
Or not old enough to go out and go drinking.
So
they go to a remix game instead.
And they don't have a lot of friends here yet. So like all their friends are playing in these other games. So they go like check out their friends. Like
true.
I don't know. I like that.
That's funny. That's true. Good point.
And having a bunch of two-way guys or like guys from like the Blazers roster that get assigned to the remixes probably also helps because you know, those are guys that they practice with every day.
We'll have to ask Kelsey because she's been to so many G League games.
Oh, yeah, she would
watching
know.
The Raptors. I bet she would know.
She would totally know. Okay, I'll go to my next one. So the second thing that I want to remember from this season is Josh Hart solidifying himself as a Blazers legend. And here's the thing. It could have been something quite bad. I could have not remember this at all. But like I think that like there's a certain level of reverence you can always have for a former Blazer who, when not even asked about you, will talk about how great you are. Just in general. And that's just on a regular day. If somebody who used to be on our team wants to say something about how great Portland is, like Portland fans are always will always listen and always remember those folks. But Josh Hart did it at a time where our franchise, I felt like, was really, really down. And so everybody, for context, if you don't remember, this was right after we had made the trade with Golden State and they sent Gary Payton back to his family to do whatever that he does over there. But then Golden State ran like a shadow campaign in the media to like talk crap about the Blazers training staff, about how they didn't treat Gary Payton too right.
Which is so uncool.
Yes.
So uncool.
But they didn't actually come out and say it is the thing. Like throughout a whole ordeal, no one went on the record to say it. They just like leaked it to Shams and whatever. And all of these stories were swirling about like maybe this trade wasn't going to happen. And they're like, and like, you know, like the Warriors wanted us, our franchise punished or whatever.
Yes, because we'd hidden all this stuff about Gary Payton because they hadn't disclosed
his injury.
The extent of his injuries for a guy who sat out the whole time. Almost.
And
the,
also
the
who
time.
got his injury in Golden State. You guys know what that injury looks like because you know what, he's had it since he was with you.
Right. And then he came to the Blazers who took care of it and rehabilitated him.
Yes. And then they like made this whole thing about like, oh, he's not going to be ready to play for a long time. Well, he definitely played like not that long after that. It was like 3 or 4 weeks and he played for them. But like they acted like he wasn't even going to be ready for that whole season. And so anyway, after all of that, when like the Blazers were taking a lot of hits because this is like not a fair fight, especially when you fight like a shadow PR campaign in the media. Like they have so many more media embedded with the Warriors team than the Blazers. We don't have national media coverage like they do. It was just a completely unfair fight. And Josh Hart, after he was traded to the Knicks, I think it was his first press conference as a Knick. He did the post-game presser. And at the end of it, he addressed the media and he said, I just want to say this. And nobody asked him about it. He just volunteered it. Portland is an organization, as an organization, was great. Joe Cronin has been great. That organization is nothing but a class act. In the front office, in the training room, and I just want to say that that organization is respectful, a class act, and does everything by the book. And I couldn't tell you how much I appreciated that from him at the time. Because one, he was basically addressing a rumor. Because nobody had actually come out and made a statement about this. It was just like, you know, like anonymous leaks from within like the Warriors organization. And I feel like players rarely like to address those unless they're directly asked about them. And then they're usually very careful. And he just came out and said from his own experience that we were a class act. Our team did everything by the books. And he explicitly called out the training staff. So there was like no way to like pretend this was about anything else other than just this rumor that was floating around Gary Payton too. And I just want to say, like, that is something I want to take with me. And I will always remember Josh Hart as like a Blazers legend for it. And like, I hope we always give him the warmest welcome when he comes back through, because like he did us solid and said something to like defend his former organization when there was absolutely no reason why he had to.
That's such a great one. I mean, he did. He was so classy when he did that. He just saw that the Blazers were just getting hammered. And like for the fan base, we were so, I just remember we were all so down at that time, because it was like, how do you fight against, you know, the Golden Warriors who can do no wrong? And I remember like really clearly, like when this was all breaking and somebody asked Joe Cronin about it, and he was like, I literally found this out 5 minutes ago. And he was so mad. It was like the maddest I've ever seen him, because he was like, you're asking me to address something that I just learned about 5 minutes ago. And he just, it was, everybody was just so mad and so upset. And it was like, things were already in a bad place. And then for them to just like kick us while we were down, and for Josh Hart to just be like, you know what? He just felt obligated to say something for no reason. I'm pretty sure nobody asked him to. Even if they did, he could have said, no, I'm done. That's in my past. Like, he was with his new team. He was fully ready to go with his new team. And he took a moment to say something in our defense, in the defense of the Blazers. And it was just like, that was a really good one. I love it.
And in New York, which is the biggest media capital in the whole like NBA, like he said it in front of all of those reporters. And I feel like, you know, when you're talking about how it wasn't a fair fight, because Portland doesn't have national media like the Warriors do, New York does. Mm-hmm. And so when Josh Hart said that, he knew that people would pick it up and repeat it and put it in their articles if they were cared about that rumor at all. Mm-hmm. And if I recall, you're right. So like Joe Cronin found out about it just a couple minutes before it happened, because I'm pretty sure they dumped it in the press like an hour before the Blazers were supposed to play. They mm-hmm. like put it out in the press like right before, like a day of a game, like right before we were going to play, where like all of like everyone from the team would be exposed to the media.
Mm-hmm.
It was just dirty.
Yeah.
But Josh Hart, Blazers legend in perpetuity.
Always. Yes. Josh Hart.
I'm glad that you made that happen.
I cannot wait to see him. I can't wait to see him. I'm definitely going to do a Josh Hart when I see him in person.
Do you have a Josh Hart jersey?
No, I don't have a Josh Hart jersey.
You don't have any of the right jerseys for this trip.
No, I don't. I have very few jerseys. I only started buying jerseys recently. Those things cost a lot of money.
I know, they do.
I had to get a few raises before I was able to start being able to afford the luxury of fancy jerseys that weren't like last year's model, right? Okay, so that was an excellent one, Josh Hart. But the next thing I'm going to say, that something I'll remember, is this year's Summer League. I'm not going to say it was like the best Summer League I've ever been to, because there were some things about it that like weren't quite as fun. Like you had to like go claim your seats like you were at a music festival and never leave, which was kind of like a bummer. But the excitement over having a team that was like literally going to be the guys that we were going to be seeing play was really fun, you know? And because, you know, remember that the legendary worst Summer League roster ever from a couple of years ago, where
everyone was like 30.
Yeah. Like, and it was just like, you know, recovering from the trauma of that, you know, the, the idea that maybe they could repeat, which obviously they didn't, but just the idea that we had these young guys who were actually going to be playing, and the excitement of that was really, really fun. And there were a lot of Blazer fans that we got to hang out with down there. And one of my strongest memories, and this is really silly, was being in Thomas and Mack Arena. That's like the big, that's the big arena. Mm-hmm. There was all this buzz and excitement about, we're going to make a big special announcement, special for Summer League. Make sure that you don't leave your seat, so you're going to hear the special announcement, blah, on and on and on about this special announcement. And I was with Eric and Kaylee, Shoes and Moops and Basket Ghoul. And we were like, they're going to announce the NBA in-season tournament. Like, duh. Like, Adam Silver did this last night, and they're going to announce the tournament. And they like had up on the Jumbotron. They're like, remember where you were. And we were like, this is it. We're remembering where we were the moment the in-season tournament was announced. So I always have that special connection with Eric and Kaylee, because we were there when the in-season tournament was announced. But in general, I had a really good time at Summer League, and some of the highlights were just like seeing like different Blazer fans. Jesse was down there, Ike was down there, being able to kind of experience that new hope. At the time, Dame still hadn't been traded, so we had that like hanging over us. So it was kind of hard to know how excited we should get about Scoot, because it's like, did Scoot ruin everything, or is Scoot the future? Yeah. And we only got one game of watching him play, but we got to watch Shaden, and it was like sort of like a taste of the like, oh no, the Blazers are going to choose a direction, and it's the future, and this is like, it was like the first taste of it, and it was really fun.
I feel like some, like if there's like a place where you're happiest, like Summer League is your happy place, where it's like, you know, I mean, technically you can win a championship there, but it's not about winning a championship there. It's like, it's also a little nice because it's like, it helps tide you over for the long summer before the actual season starts. Mm-hmm. It's like, you know, it's like when they do like a summer school, you know, and when you're in elementary school and you do summer school, they like do it in July so that like, you know, it's a little bit after you've stopped going to your regular school.
And you're like, why isn't school always like this? Like why don't they always play simultaneous basketball games right next to each other where you can go back and forth and,
right.
And watch all of them and like have all the players walking around in the milieu? Like, why isn't it always like this?
I don't know. Well, now a little bit it is now with the Remix in town, where like the players are like, they're just right there. Mm-hmm. That's a really good one. And it's also very like, I would expect nothing less for there to be a Summer League.
Well, and then sort of the corollary to that one is that the in-season tournament, because the in-season tournament was really fun.
I
was there for the one game that the Blazers won for the in-season tournament, and it was really fun. And yes, you know, I think it was a big success, and people are already like, here's all the things we need to change about it. Like, okay, yeah, like whatever. But I'm really hoping that it is here to stay for a while, because I thought that was a really fun thing.
People are gonna poo-poo it, and I'm not gonna lie, there was like a moment where I was like, well, this just feels like they've like really like tipped their hand to say that the Lakers have to go, because there was some stuff that happened where I was like, well, of course you. And then when I like watched the actual like Vegas in season tournament, they had so much LeBron content, I was like, they needed LeBron to go. If they needed to put their finger on the scale to get the Lakers there, then so be it. I guess that's what was probably the attitude. Anyway, but like Tyrese Halliburton's star properly rose during the in-season tournament. Yeah. Like, I mean, not to say that he was not a star before, because I don't think that's true. I think he was. But like, national media attention on Tyrese Halliburton, like they saw it. The vision was there. And then everybody was talking about how Sacramento lost that trade, as if Sacramento wasn't in the playoffs last year and the Pacers were sitting at home on their couch. But like, no. I fully believe that both teams won that trade. And also Tyrese Halliburton definitely had his coming out party to like national media in that particular tournament.
And I can see that happening every year. I bet you every year there's going to be some team, some person who gets the spotlight early on in a way that they never would have before.
Yes, because everyone's paying attention to those games. All the media is watching those games, and it's a really great opportunity to suddenly announce yourself as like, oh, I'm here and I'm going to be a killer for the next 10 years. So get ready. Yeah. Good one. That's a really good one. Okay. My last thing to remember is something you just touched on. Decisive rebuild.
Yes.
Because I feel like in like the years prior, we were always like half foot in the door, half foot out the door on a rebuild. We were never fully rebuilding. It was like a soft rebuild. And that meant that everyone they brought in was like filled the right role, but wasn't necessarily very good kind of a thing. And it was just like never, it was always an underwhelming offseason when you're like straddling a rebuild slash stay the course. And I was so pleased this year when we weren't really sure what was going to happen that like the team just went hard, decisive rebuild when it was time to make a decision. And granted, I think some of that decision was accelerated by like the trade requests and all that stuff. But like decisive rebuild felt really good. And it was also the first time that we got to see like kind of what Joe Cronin was going to be about as a GM. Like, because obviously the prior GM, like that dude was not in here for a decisive rebuild. He was always kind of like, you never know what I'm gonna do. Like, you know, it's the off season. Like, I'm always wheeling and dealing, dad being tacked on as the third team in a weird trade where I get a second round draft pick or something, you know, something weird like that. But like, no, Joe Cronin went out there and he made deals. He was like, deals for picks. Like, if your deal doesn't include a pick, we're not interested. I don't care what players they involve. Like, I'm also here for picks. And so like he went out and he did like the thing where he amassed a ton of picks. He got some really great looks at like great players, guys who were like, we had some, he brought in some vet guys to like be kind of mentors to the young guys. He got draft picks, and he took a couple flyers on some younger guys who might fit and might not. Like, nothing wrong with that.
I love that pick. Having a decisive, like choosing a direction was so important. And it was like we didn't know we were lost and just wandering around in the wilderness until a path was put in front of us. And it's like, oh my God, there's a path. We can now follow the path.
They make paths out here?
And I think what we need to remember is just because we found a path doesn't mean that we're close to our destination. We're still gonna have to like walk the whole path, but at least we're not just wandering around anymore. And that's
No.
huge.
Yeah. It feels like we went from rudderless to like having like a mission. And who knows if the mission will succeed? I mean, I'll say most franchises put together a mission and they don't end in a championship. But does it take you somewhere that's fun and worth going? Hopefully.
Yeah, and what you said about like we have a GM that we know what he's about. And I think like an underrated, or maybe it's appropriate related thing that he did was bringing on Mike Schmitz, because as we are learning about all these players that have been added to the roster this year, you go back and I think almost every single one of them has like a special interview with Mike Schmitz. Like these are people who were on Mike Schmitz's radar for a long time. And for them to just like prioritize scouting of young guys and scouting internationally a way that they just didn't in the past, really shows the identity of who are, at least who our GM is. Like he's not gonna just try to like find guys that maybe weren't the right fit somewhere else and make them the right fit in Portland. Like, no, he's looking at guys whose whole essence of who they are and how they play fits his vision of how the team wants to play.
Yeah, I
Good
think
one.
that's smart too, to think about like not only like we know what Joe Cronin's about, but like what he values. Because like I can't think of another scout whose name we knew prior to Mike Schmitz. Like that wasn't what was going, because I feel like some GMs have like this ego thing where they're like, I'm the scout.
Yeah. Like, yeah. Well, looking at Olshay talking about how he found Damian Lillard.
Yeah, like I'm the scout. I'm like, you can't be a scout that's deeply embedded with all of the talent that's out there and do GM stuff. You need advisors. Like, that's just not how it works. You think the president is out there researching every topic that he needs to, like, you know, speak on? No, he has advisors that brief him and coach him up very quickly on the things, and you trust them. Like, so we've seen Cronin build his council, and it looks good so far.
Okay, I'm going to move on to my third thing that I'm going to remember. On October 5th, our queen, Brooke Olsendam, was interviewing the coach. And the words that came out of her mouth, my heart stopped and angels soared and birds flew and the light came, all the lights came on. She said, "Coach, I heard you were practicing lobs." And those were the music to my ears. I've been joking for 10 years about how Blazers needed to spend the summer practicing lobs. And are they great at lobs? No. Are they finishing all of their alley-oops? No. Are they trying? Yes. And I'm just so excited that they're trying and that they want to do this. And I hope they keep it up. I'm so excited. And I was just thrilled when I heard that they were like on purpose, like leaking out to people that they were practicing lobs.
I mean, they have great lob threats now. You know, and then especially
they just need to put it together. They just
totally. And that was practice. Something that I will say that like Dame didn't really have in his bag. He was not really a lobber.
No, I will. That is a hill I will die on. Is that if Damian Lillard is going to be throwing a lob at the basket, he might as well just throw it in. Like he had a lob to Giannis the other day, and it's like it was like how was that? I mean, that was so close to being goaltending because it was going in. You know, yeah. like that's not Damian. Like, he is a shooter, so why interrupt it with, or why have somebody else interrupt his shot? Just take it. But now they have like Scoot is, and even other guys are trying it, and I can't wait for Robert Williams to come back if he's going to be with the team next year, because I think he's actually probably one of the best at it, and we haven't even seen him really.
Yeah, like that was actually when Danny Ainge talked about the Time Lord nickname. He was like, "I don't like that nickname. We should call him Lob Williams." And I'm like, "That's cute, but it's not going to hit like Time Lord."
Ooh, that is good though.
Lob Williams. Yeah.
Good job, Danny.
Yeah. Eugene legend, Danny Ainge. Went to my rival high school. Well, not
really.
Not really. I don't know. My school didn't really have a rival high school, but if you want to do like
the other
yeah, if you want to do like the north south thing, there was north and south high schools in my town, and you know, I went to south and he went to north. Yes, that one's really good, and I'm so, and also very on brand for you, Tara, that you want to see lobs, because lobs are dunks.
Well, they're potential dunks anyway.
They're potential dunks. Lobs equals more dunks.
Yes.
Which we like.
All right. Should we move on to things to forget?
Oh, yeah. Things to forget. All right. Okay.
We'll try not to dwell on these too long.
Yes. Things to forget. Okay. So my first thing to forget is like how the entire summer kind of got ruined by trade drama. Like, I never, ever, ever want to live through an off season that stretches out like that in limbo for so long. It kind of sucked.
Mm-hmm.
It was like the whole summer. It wasn't one of those.
You're talking about the Damian Lillard aspect of it.
Yes. Mm-hmm. The Damian Lillard aspect of the trade drama, like where he requested a trade and then like the whole, it took the whole summer to get to move him on. And I, not to say that I think that was a bad decision at all, but as a fan, it was wretched.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And just, we want to just put that in the past.
Yeah. I just want to forget, like, I know that we can't forget that, like, that happened, because that's a big part of, like, our franchise history, is it, like, when we moved on from Dame. But, like, I want to forget how long it took. I want to forget that I thought about it, like, way too much for the whole summer, and the summer's supposed to be enjoyable, and I was like, what's going on with my team? I don't know. Mm-hmm. Well, I'll forget that it took that long. In my head, I'll just try to, like, compartmentalize it. I'm like, oh, it took 2.5 weeks, right?
Yeah. And then we had to also like have all those back and forth with Miami fans. We had to watch all of that. Just so much speculation. I will say that the one advantage of it was that by the time Damian Lillard was traded, we had all pre-grieved and we were done. Not all of us, but I know many of us who are close on friends in our friend group had pre-grieved and were like, okay, bye.
Yeah, we're just get it over with. Get it over with. We don't need to see each other again. Like,
we made our playlist like back in July. we've played it a million times. We're done.
Yeah, that's right. Like, we'll have a friend drop off your stuff that you've left here and we'll just move on.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm that's the thing I would like to forget. I would like to forget that it took that long. I would like to forget that, like, Oh, God, if there's anyone, like, who wants to fight with Miami fans? I don't want to fight with Miami fans. Like, fighting with fans on Twitter is just, like, it's soul-sucking. Because half of them are bots.
And then you see your friends doing it, and you're like, why are you getting involved?
No, hit that mute.
Yes, just walk away.
The mute button is free. And you know what? Honestly, if they charged me to mute or block individual people, I'd consider it.
Me too. Well, one of the things I want to forget is closely related to that. I understand that there was going to be a little bit of hard feelings when the trade finally happened, because when you're that together with somebody for 11 years, it's, you know, you've compared it to, like, you know, breaking up or whatever. It's no matter how much you appreciate each other, there's a reason that you're separating, and it's going to be hard. But the thing that I want to forget is that letter that he wrote, that Instagram post.
Ugh.
I was just like, really? Like, he knew he was leaving. He could have, like, spent some time on it. And, you know, he could have, like, had people read it over and go, oh, you forgot Brooke Goldsendam. Why don't you add Brooke Goldsendam, the queen of Rip City, who you forgot? You know, like,
who made you very, like, close to the, like, she helped facilitate his relationship with the fans. Like, Brooke Goldsendam's whole job is to help bridge that gap for us with the players, and she does it very well.
And I'm sure it was just an oversight. Again, it's just an oversight, but you knew this was coming. Like, you could have had it pre-written, had some people be like, you know, like, I think one of the things is we were spoiled by CJ's, because, and it's not really fair to compare them, because CJ, like, he loves journalism. He loves writing. That's his thing. That's how he loves. That's what he loves to do. So, you know, not necessarily fair to compare to Damian, who, a musician, wrote a whole track about saying goodbye, which I'm not even going to go into, because my other thing that I'm going to forget is that I was never even a fan of his music in the first place. And I tried so hard and I just didn't get it. So I missed the whole track that he wrote, and maybe that was much more wonderful than his Instagram post. But I was not impressed by his Instagram post, not only because he left out some key people, but it was, like, hard to read. Like, he clearly, like, wrote it out somewhere. Like, you couldn't have copied that and put that into the text of the post. Like,
it was, you know, like, white on black.
And it was like white on black on a black and white image. Like, it doesn't meet accessibility standards, but I don't think that he necessarily is an NBA player, you know, reading over what the accessibility standards are for digital communications. I understand that. But, like, it was hard to read.
And
it was just like, I get it. I totally get that there was a lot of feelings that were involved. I just felt like he knew this was coming. He could have had somebody pre-read it. And I just want to forget that was how Damian Lillard decided to say goodbye, because he said it wasn't goodbye, that he'll still be around. Haven't seen him, but, you know, of course, that's because we're in the middle of the season. I'm sure we'll see him lots in the off season. But yeah, I just want to forget that and move on.
Yeah, I'm with you. I had, you know, when you said that this was going to be one of your things to forget, I had already forgotten about it. I had forgotten about this letter. And then you brought it up and I was like, oh, that's a good one, because you're right. The letter, like, I don't, you're right. He didn't thank Brooke. I don't think he thanked Kevin and Lamar. Like, there was a bunch of people, but then it was weird, the people that he did choose to, like, thank sometimes. And so, and then it was like, I felt like there were so many people that he thanked that it was, like, a little bit about who he wasn't thanking more than it was about who he was thanking, which felt bad.
Yeah.
That feels petty. And the other thing about that, that, like, made me feel like I was in the Twilight Zone about that letter, is that the media fawned over it.
Oh.
And I was like, the national media was like, look at this guy. Look at this man leaving this franchise that he was with for so long. Like, this is all love. And I was like, yeah, but you haven't read, like, the substance of this letter. Like, yes, it's a lot of images big. When he posted it, it was like four images big on Twitter or whatever. But, like, did you read it? Like, as a fan, I was like, I'm seeing these people that I would think that would be mentioned here. And these people, it's weird that you are mentioning them. Like, I just felt very perplexed by the media loving it when fans were like,
I was so underwhelmed by it. That was the thing which surprised me, is that like for somebody who spent so much time meticulously crafting his image and doing everything right, for that to be like the final goodbye, it was just kind of like, this doesn't feel right.
I'll say this. I did listen to his song like once. And the thing that stood out to me is I was like, how did you have this song ready to go? But it feels like you wrote this letter yesterday.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
It's like, it's, you know what it felt like to me? It felt like he had prepared the song and thought that that would be enough. And then realized someone told him like 24 hours ahead of time. They're like, I don't think that song is going to be enough. I think you should we write a letter? And then he's like, oh crap, I better write a letter. And that's what he wrote.
Yeah. And it could have just been short and sweet. You know, it could have been just like the first couple of lines. Like, do I even have it? You know, it could have been, I want to start off by saying this isn't goodbye, I'll see you later, and then jump to the end where like, I'll see you again soon, thanks for the memories. And we would have been like, well, that was short, but also he didn't leave out a bunch of people.
Yeah. And I felt, so the end of, I remember in the end of that letter, it was said something like, you know, I hope you'll like forgive me for breaking your heart as well as my own or something.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, one, when you apologize to people, you don't bring yourself into like how your feelings, like that's a no-no. And two, it felt like the whole letter was building towards this quote apology, but still understand where I'm coming from thing. But like the things that preceded it didn't set that up well. Like, it's like sometimes when you see the ending of a movie and they think that they like did something really emotional and like what they do at the end is supposed to hit you really hard, but they didn't really earn it. And so you're like, I don't feel anything, and this is weird. That's what I felt like. I was like, well, like the end wasn't earned by what preceded it.
Oh my God. What you just said, I didn't feel anything, and this is weird. That's exactly what I felt. Nothing. And it was weird. Maybe it was all that pre-grieving that we did. And he did mention Chief. So, I mean, he almost won me over. You know, you can win me over by bringing in Alpha Ruka Minu into any conversation. I'm yours. So he almost won me back by saying something like, so at the end, he was like, as Chief always used to say, I don't have it called up. I only have like the first four things of it on Twitter. There's four more things and I can't find it right now. But anyway, he did.
And you couldn't read it even if you could.
Right. Yeah. Because it was also all capital letters. Another thing that makes it harder to read.
Yeah. Capital white letters on black and grayscale photo in the background.
Yeah.
Aye.
Contrast.
I'm with you, by the way, on that. Okay, so I have one more thing that I would like to forget. And it's something I've already touched on in the things I'd like to remember. But this is the flip side of that.
Mm-hmm.
I want to forget that Gary Payton, too, was ever a trailblazer.
Mm-hmm.
He was barely a trailblazer. I felt like what happened is we... dog sat for the Golden State Warriors while they're like, we're out of town, we can't really like take care of our dog right now, here, you take care of it. And then we took it for a couple of months because they like, you know, like they were in a, you know, they couldn't do it. And then they're like, okay, now we're ready to bring it back. Like, it just didn't feel, it was like one of those things, you're like, oh, we bonded for like a tiny bit, but mostly you were hurt, we didn't really see you, we heard stories about you, but like we didn't experience you as fans. And so really we were just like dog sitting for a couple of months and then we sent, you know, him back to his family.
Mm-hmm.
That's what it feels like to me.
I tried so hard to be excited.
What did he do for us even? Like what did, like, can you remember anything memorable he did as a trailblazer?
Yes, I can remember I can remember two memorable things.
Tell me.
He and Josh Hart used to play hacky sack before every game.
That's right.
And then the other thing that he did, which I couldn't believe my eyes, was when he finally did play for the Blazers, there was a play where I think the other team was inbounding it. I remember watching it clear as day. The other team was inbounding it. I think the other team was, okay, somebody was inbounding it. Anfernee Simons ran up to cover in some way. And Gary Payton apparently didn't like the way that Anthony Simons was doing it. So he grabbed Ant by the arm and swung him like dramatically and violently out of the way to get somewhere else, to like be like, no, you're supposed to be over there because I'm Gary Payton and I play defense and you're Ant and you're terrible at defense. And he grabbed his arm and I was just like, did I just see that? And I was like asking the people around me. And I remember that Sean Heike tweeted about it. I was like, because I thought I was crazy. I couldn't believe that I just saw that. And it was just like, it was just, he was so extra all the time. Like he would like go for a, like, you don't need to hurt yourself on this play. Like it's just an out of bounds play. We're not in the championship. We're like 4 minutes into the second quarter. You don't need to like hurl yourself on the ground and, you know, hurt yourself again. But that play where he grabbed Anthony Simons and threw him out into a different position, he lost me on that one. I tried so hard. I wanted so badly for it to work. And after that, I was like, his heart's not here. He wants out. He wants to be back home.
I have a conspiracy theory about the people who decided that they were going to love Gary Payton on this team. They were all just Beavers fans trying to love another Beaver that made it in the NBA and that was on this team. And I was like, we have Drew Eubanks. Don't force it. We don't need it. It's fine. Drew Eubanks can be your that can be your king. Like you don't need to try to make this work. Cause like, I swear, I just never saw him do anything memorable. He like everybody like was like, oh, he's going to transform our defense. I'm like, no, he's just a little guy throwing himself around out there. Like,
oh my God. If I heard, oh, but he plays like he's 7 feet tall. One more time, I was going to commit a crime. I was like, everybody said that. Like people who are never supposed, like I heard so many media members, like, you know, well-informed fans be like, oh, but he plays like he's seven. He plays taller than his height. Never, ever, ever, ever say that to me again about any other player. I no longer believe that is possible.
I don't understand that at all. He always felt tiny to me because he was always on the ground, and any 7-footer that was on the ground that much would just be constantly injured.
Well, and all we heard about for years was how the Blazers couldn't have these two small guards. And so then Gary Payton comes in and we go, okay, well, we've been told for 10 years that you can't have two small guards. And now you're telling me, oh, but this one's different. No.
Yeah. This one can't shoot.
Yeah.
Is that better?
I just was like, I'm not going to believe that anymore. When anybody says that to me, oh, but this one's different. No, it's not. No, it's not.
Well, he was different, but not in a way that made it like so you could play him that way. But like having two small guards, fine, you can say that that doesn't work. But like having two small guards and this one doesn't shoot seems extra bad to me. But I don't know. Maybe that's just me. Like, no, it didn't work. It doesn't work for me. I want to forget that it ever happened. I don't even want to remember that era because it was a bad era. And I just think of him as like somebody who like just lost his way for a little bit, got lost away from his team, made his way back home. Like, you know, that dog that they, what is it? They car relayed from Virginia back to Montana because he got stolen. Maybe you didn't hear about the story.
No.
There was a dog that got stolen from somebody and then it ended up in like Virginia or something. And then because it was a pit bull, they couldn't fly it back home. So a bunch of people like relayed it back to its family in Montana.
Yeah.
Well, that's what this is, but it's for an NBA player.
Well, I'm always gonna be of the theory that he never expected to play in Portland, and this was the only way that he could get his money from Golden State, and Golden State and Gary Payton knew what they were doing. That's my theory. Totally a theory, but I just can't see it any other way.
The logistics were as such as they couldn't afford to re-sign him, which is why he signed him. And they had to trade up for him to get him back.
Right. And in my mind, the silent agreement was that we'll revisit this again at the trade deadline. We can't pay you now. Go get what you can get from whoever you can get it from. And then you're an important part of this team. We'll see what we can do with the trade deadline. And I have nothing to base that on except for, to me, that seems super logical. That's what I would have done.
Yeah. And also his agent is the same agent as Dame's agent.
Oh, yeah. Okay. We can't even go there.
Yeah. But I'm just saying that guy has like three clients and they've all been Blazers in the last 2 years.
Yeah. Plus Kelgen Blevins. Okay. My things to forget is because I actually forgot so much that I had a hard time thinking about things to forget. Yeah. But at the beginning of this preseason, the closed captions on the Jumbotron were so outrageously off and wrong. I hope that the new system has been trained and we never have to go back there again, because people who relied on those closed captions were not getting what they needed. I can happily report that they are much better now. And I hopefully we will never have to go back to them being so awfully wrong again.
Yeah, I remember like people posting pictures of the closed captions during the national anthem. Mm-hmm. And like the idea that you couldn't like just preload those.
Yeah.
Like we know what the words to that are. They're not going to change. Just go ahead and preload those in. And that was like another one of those moments where I'm like, yeah. Okay, AI had a year, but it also still sucks.
Yeah. No, I have some up on my on a Twitter post that I posted when they were playing New Zealand. And it's there. Oh, say, ain't done. Guys, it started. Suspect angle. That's the Star Spangled Banner. Anyway, put that in the past.
Suspect angle is probably Spangled Banner.
Yeah, we could spend some time probably trying to figure out exactly what part of the song that was.
Honestly, I'm either too smart or too dumb to do that.
Mostly it's a timing thing.
Yeah,
we gotta
that's
get
right.
Through this.
Okay, we did it. We figured out the things we want to forget, Tara. Let's just
wash our hands of them. Goodbye.
Yeah, we're done with that. One thing to look forward to. My one thing is very, very like this is like this is like recency bias, I'll say. Is Scoot's rookie season development had a slow start, but I am so excited that he's hitting his stride right now. And we've seen a lot from him in the last like 4 to 6 weeks. And so that's what I am looking forward to, is more Scoot development.
Mm-hmm.
He has been really fun to see him get some confidence and to also like not. And I think that like, you know, we talked about this once before, how like he seemed like he was like feeling a lot of the pressure of the national media after being like a top draft pick. And then he got hurt and two things happened. One, they stopped covering him because he was injured. And two, they started bringing him off the bench. And that like, I think reduced the like kind of pressure he was feeling. He can like, you see him like talking to Chauncey Billups on the sidelines. You see him like watching the game before he actually has to go into the game. He's like getting a lot of opportunity to like see it before he has to experience it and like without the media scrutiny. And so I think mm-hmm. that like maybe all of that combined has really allowed him to like try new stuff and like find who he is as an NBA player. And it's been really exciting to watch.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I agree that coming off the bench seems like it's been really good for his development. And I also like see his trajectory. Like it's going to be like up and down. Like he'll make a big stride and then he'll probably slide back and then probably make a big stride and go back. But like just the way he's played the last few weeks, I have no doubt that he's going to get there. At the beginning, it was kind of like, okay, yeah. I'm going with like all these people said, and I'm trying super hard not to listen to what all these people said, but like all these people said, including Mike Schmitz, you know, this is who it's going to be. And I was like, oh boy. And it's not that I like doubted it. It was just that like, we simply didn't see it. But recently he, like you were saying, it's weird to say playing with confidence because I think he's always had confidence, but he's playing in a way where he's, I think, not overthinking things. He just knows the thing that he's supposed to do given the personnel that he has been playing with. I think that's one of the things that is maybe different, is that he has to figure out how to play off and with all of the guys that he's playing with right now. And they're all a different caliber of player than he's ever played with before. So he had to figure out how to make all of that work. I see him like every single time, if he's on the floor, every single, you know, stop in game where he has a chance, he runs over to the coach and he talks to the coach and they seem to be like really bonded, which, say whatever you want to about the coach, the coach was a great point guard. And I think Scoot really looks to him for advice on how to do it. And I also I know I make fun of Malcolm Brogdon in the group chat a lot.
Out of love.
Out of love. But I really like having Malcolm's just like calm presence. And it's not like Scoot is like out of control all the time, but he still does need to sort of like figure out how to regulate all the things that he has to think about as a point guard. Because a point guard has to think about so many things, but you can just see it all coming together. And I think like those steep increases are going to be really steep and exciting. And I don't think that the drop-offs are going to be like, oh no, this is, you know, he's hit the rookie wall and then like, it's, that's it. That's as high as he's going to get. I think I'm starting to really see like dramatically, even if it takes him 4 years to get there, I like, oh, I see now. I see. And it's very different from Damian Lillard. And it's going to be, he's going to constantly have to learn who the new players are around him. So that's going to be really interesting. But I think we're set up well.
Yeah, I agree. And I actually think it's better. Like when I think back to like, you know, a lot of the rookies that like turned into really great players, like the ones that come right out the gate, there aren't that many that come right out the gate and impress in like the, like October, November.
It just always feels like somebody else has one.
Yeah, and it's just like, I think that it's actually like hard to live up to that for an entire season. Because, you know, what happens is then guys make adjustments because mm-hmm. they like actually have tape of you to watch against NBA teams. And then like, you're not as good. And then it looks like you like started high and then fell off, even though it's just like guys getting to figure out how to play you, like Wemby. You know, people have to figure out how to play a guy like that because there's no archetype for him in the NBA.
Mm-hmm.
But like, I think there's actually like something more powerful about that, like kind of like just slow, steady incline and getting better and better and better over time and working it out as you go. And some of those guys to me have had like really great long lasting careers. Cause you know, you start like there's obviously some guys like that started out like high and then just always stayed that way. But yeah. I remember like when Porzingis first came, like people were like, oh, Porzingis unicorn. And I'm like, eh, really? Like I have been talking about Porzingis a whole lot.
Is he on your fantasy team?
No, God, oh. No. My dad likes Porzingis and he likes Embiid and he likes, oh, like, I just right. like, he likes everything that I hate.
Yeah. He's just trolling you.
Yes. And my dad's like, look at it, you know, look at him on Boston. I'm like, well, I don't really watch Boston that much. Mm-hmm. But if Porzingis can't succeed on Boston, then he can't succeed anywhere because they literally put him into a perfect sized role that's like not too big for him because everyone else around him is so good.
Yeah. 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 With regards to Scoot, you know, how like over the last couple weeks, there's been a lot of discussion about, you know, alpha and having a guy who plays cool or not, and like who is the coach calling out with all that stuff, like, okay, whatever, that whole discussion, put that all aside, I feel like Scoot is the kind of guy who can be the engine that gets everybody running. And I think Scoot and Jabari and these guys who are currently coming off the bench, like for our future, can be the guys who start the game hot. But right now, yeah, they're like in this learning phase where they can't just like come out with their hair on fire, because then it would just be like the ball. We saw what it was like. The ball was going all over the place and up in the 10th row of the stands. And it was just like, it wasn't working. But I could see Scoot being the guy who can come out, and whether or not it's getting other players involved right from the beginning, but that he can bring that energy that the coach keeps alluding to. I think Scoot's the guy who can bring that energy. That's just not where the Blazers are right now.
I didn't even understand that whole alpha thing. It was like a really? Reminder. Well, I mean, I understand what he was saying, but I don't agree with it. And two, I don't think that makes you immune to having bad starts.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I just don't think that's any player. I watch a lot of other teams now because I'm playing, you know, fantasy basketball this year. So I watch more different teams than I have in previous years. And also because I have league pass. And every guy, every superstar has bad starts sometimes, literally mm-hmm. every single one of them. Yeah. Like, but LeBron has bad starts. They don't do it every game. That's right. But like, this idea that there's some guy that you can stick out there every game and he's going to get you off to a good start is just not true.
I don't think it's that not true though. I'm not like, I don't want to come out here and like, you know, defend like everything and the coach and all that stuff. But I'll say two things. One thing, when he talked about how we have a bunch of cool guys, that made complete sense to me. Because when you look at the guys who are on that team who are the most experienced and key parts of the team, Anfernee Simons, Jeremy Grant, Malcolm Brogdon, these are all guys whose whole thing is that they're chill. And like, you can be an excellent player and be chill, but you need to have somebody to like rub the two stones together and make a spark.
But do you think that there are guys out there that are chill stars?
Kawhi Leonard.
That like our coach?
Paul George.
That our coach would be like, no, he's not an alpha. Do you think that he thinks that Kawhi Leonard's not, or Paul George is not, or whoever else?
I don't think that they are. I mean, okay, the thing is I've watched a lot of the CW, and I've watched a lot of teenage dramas that are based around werewolves. And if you watch those, you know what an alpha is. The alpha is the leader of the pack. And they may not be the best fighter. They may not be the smartest. They may not be the richest. But they're the one that everybody looks to run the pack. And like, you know, it was like with like LaMarcus wasn't, but Damian was. LaMarcus did the best with what he could, with the skills and the natural, you know, personality that he has. Damian Lillard was born to do stuff like that.
Do you think that all teams need an alpha?
I think it helps a lot.
Because sometimes those alpha, like if you're talking about how they're not the best, like sometimes those dudes get their teams in trouble.
I think you're in the best situation when he is the best.
I was like, some of those dudes are getting their team in trouble. Like Draymond Green is suspended right now.
Yeah.
Because he was a fighting alpha.
Look at Denver. Like Jokic is their best player.
Yes.
But like, you know, when you ask like who's the heart of the team, you know, like 2 years ago, like Adam Marius said, it's coach. You know, it's like who it's just like people just have different personalities, and sometimes their personalities line up with their skills, and sometimes, or you know, with their like playing skills, and sometimes they don't. And it's like it's all just like chemistry. But like I understood where he was coming from when he said the thing about the cool guys. Like he has these guys who just kind of chill and they're really, really good. And I don't think he was saying that they aren't fired up, but like they don't have a guy who gets fired up. Who like Wesley Matthews.
Yeah.
He's kind of like the example. And I was like, okay, I think Tamani, once he gets a little bit of more, because he gets in there, he gets, you know, he gets feisty. He argues with guys, you know, like it's okay for him he's comfortable in that realm. Like if Anfernee Simons gets a technical, we all talk about it for a week because we can't believe that's so out of character for him.
So let me just clarify. I understand the concept of an alpha, like, you know, in biology and stuff. But I just don't see that being a strong correlation for who's going to be the best team. Because we have seen plenty of very good basketball teams, championship basketball teams, that did not have that personality type that you are talking about. And I don't think that is an excuse for why your team is not doing what it's supposed to do, because I don't think every team needs one. Look at Denver. I don't think that they have one in Phoenix. I mean, they're also not very good right now.
Yeah.
But like, they don't think they have one in Phoenix. I don't think they have one in LA with the Clippers. Like, they have one on the Lakers, but like, I just don't think that necessarily means that you're going to be a good team. And plenty of teams have those guys that suck. Like their team sucks. I don't understand why that is supposed to be an excuse or an explanation for why your team is not going to make a leap in X, Y, or Z category.
I guess that when you put it that way, what I'm thinking about more was I can understand why he said it. Because of like the mentality of being an NBA player. And this is like, they all think this is how they think. I don't know that now that you've pointed all this out that he was right, but I understand why he said it. And to be mystified about why he said it, I don't understand that. Like, I understand why he said it because of like the society in which he grew. That, sure. Like, that's a common thing to say, but the way, you know, what you point out about it, like, is it really true? I hadn't really thought about that. So that's, So that's where I sit on that. Like, I understand why he said it. I'm not mystified by why he said it. I'm not sure I agree with it, especially given everything that you've just said. But I understand, like, why those words came out of his mouth.
Yeah.
Should
and
they
I
have? I don't know.
I don't know. I don't know if I don't know how true it is about this team. I mean, so like, I know he does have a lot of chill guys on this team. But to me, it was said because he was used as an excuse. And to me, I do not think it is a valid excuse. Mm-hmm. And that, and if it's not a valid excuse, it's like, it sounds like a criticism of his team that is not necessarily a criticism that is, that means that that's why they're not as good as they should be, or being able to do certain things that other teams are. Like, mm-hmm. I just don't think that you necessarily need that kind of a player to be a good team. And it felt like him saying, well, this is why we're not better. And I'm like,
can't you see him throwing that out though, as a challenge on purpose?
Maybe if he thinks he has like an alpha, like in waiting.
Yes.
But I don't look around at that team and I'm like, I mean, I guess Tumani Kamara could be an alpha in waiting, but he's like still very much like, I mean, he's still a rookie.
Well, but like, and if he said it to try to get Ant to become more vocal, more, I mean, again, whether or not it's the right thing to do, I can see why if he's trying to like throw spaghetti at the wall and try anything, yeah. Why it was one of the top things that he went to before he goes farther down the list.
Yeah. Also, I just say I'll on like a personal level, I have a hard time with coaches calling out their players in public. Mm-hmm. I feel like that's like, and a lot of times you see like player, like coaches calling out their players on the microphone like that. Mm-hmm. It usually leads to like the deterioration of like locker rooms. Mm-hmm. We've seen that happen quite a bit where like, it's usually not even necessarily like leads to the deterioration. It's probably a reflection of a deterioration that's already happening behind the scenes. Mm-hmm. I think about how like Monty, what's his face? The guy who's in Detroit. Monty Williams in Detroit. That's like what it felt like on his way out in Phoenix. Mm-hmm. And then it was like the beginning of the end for him in Phoenix. And he's doing it kind of in Detroit now, because now I'm paying attention to Detroit because they're so bad, you have to pay attention to them.
Oh, Kevin Knox is on that team.
Oh, God. I know. They won yesterday.
I know. I keep seeing like graphics after a loss where they show a picture of Kevin Knox. And I'm like, come on. Like, don't blame this on Kevin Knox.
He started, I think, in that game that they won.
Well, there you go.
Maybe they should have been starting him.
It is certainly not a technique that I would employ. I do not think that you motivate people that way. I just don't think it's outside the realm of the types of things that these coaches are going to try to do when they're trying to figure out how to motivate their guys.
I think that's fair.
Yeah.
That's definitely fair.
Did I do mine?
No, it's time for you to do yours. The thing you're looking forward to.
I think we kind of talked about it, so I'm not going to dwell on it for a really long time. But the thing that I'm going to take into next, I looked at like, what am I going to take into next year? So it's not real necessarily what I'm looking forward to, but what am I going to take into next year is this, this phrase or the saying that I heard on a Bravo podcast. The only way out is through. And that to me is like, we are at the beginning of a rebuild, and I'm going to try to hang on to that. Because like we were talking about, we're wandering around in the woods and finally we found a path. Just because we're on the path doesn't mean we're there yet. We're still going to have to walk a long way to get to where we want to go. But the only way we're going to get there is if we keep putting one foot in front of the other and keep going. And I think that's what we have to keep in mind about the Blazers. And I'm trying to remind myself that they're going to try a lot of things, but they're focused on like they, like you said, they chose a direction, they chose youth, and it's gonna take a long time, but we just have to do it. They have to play all these games where they lose. They have to play all these games where they play these vets. Like, I'm not worried about Jeremy Grant and Malcolm Brogdon playing all these times because these guys have to experience playing alongside guys who know what they're doing. Otherwise they're Detroit, right? you have to have some guys who know what they're doing. And I think as they learn, like, you know, the usefulness of Malcolm Brogdon in that capacity may be over by the trade deadline, and his value for what the Blazers need to bring in to accomplish their goals, you know, might be the perfect time for him to move on. So I'm not saying that they like can't get rid of Malcolm Brogdon or Jeremy Grant, but They have to go through all of this. They have to go through these losses. They have to go through these surprising wins. And the only way that we're going to, every January I have the same comparison where you're driving through a rainstorm and you just can't stop. You just have to keep going. So that's what I'm going to continue with this rebuild, is the only way out is through.
I like that so much. Also, like, as a Blazer fan, I don't know why, but January is always miserable. Mm-hmm. But February has usually been good to us.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we usually have crappy Januaries and good Februaries. And maybe that's, like, what we can look forward to, hopefully, you know, getting to a clearing in February.
Yeah. And I guess the thing that I'll add to is that it's, like, what I mean by this is they're not going to, like, there's not going to be some silver bullet that they can bring in where they're going to be able to skip steps and suddenly they're going to be a play-in team and suddenly they're going to be a playoff team. Like, they can't skip any steps. There's no way. You just have to keep going and you have to keep doing the right thing. Otherwise it's just smoke and mirrors, like we did the last 10 years.
Yeah. It's like skipping a step while you're baking. You know, mm-hmm. like you can like try and like put together a bake as well as you possibly can. But if you skip a step, like proving mm-hmm. your dough or something, it's not going to bake up well. And then you got to throw it all out and start again.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So, yes, exactly.
I'm with you. Like it's going to take time. It's not going to just be like, and now we're suddenly good. Like look at OKC. OKC did the same thing that we're doing right now, but they're like three years ahead of us.
Mm-hmm.
And like now they're just becoming that, like, that really good competitive team. But it wasn't like Shea came out of the box ready to go and mm-hmm. all of a sudden the team was really good. They had to like find other pieces. They had to like develop their system and how they were going to play, and now they're quite good. But remember, they were not good for quite a while after they decided to like divest from the whole like mm-hmm. the team of yesterday, which when they had like Russell Westbrook and stuff like that.
Yeah they're a good one to show as an example.
Also centered around a Canadian, I will say.
Oh, yes.
Two Canadians, technically. They have two Canadians in their starting lineup. On so maybe OKC? we need a second Canadian, maybe.
Maybe that's what this year's going to be all about, is finding another Canadian in the draft.
Because they have Shea, and who's they also second? Have Lou Dort is a Canadian.
Oh, okay. I didn't know Lou Dort was a Canadian.
Yeah. Also, now that I think about it, Denver has, I don't think they have two Canadians, too.
Jamal Murray, right?
Yeah. And somebody else now. Maybe that's not right.
Maybe we'll have to go do a study of all the lineups.
Yeah, I've spent a lot of time thinking about Canadians because I'm like, who would want to go play for the Raptors? I'm like, Canadians might.
Yeah.
RJ Barrett's a Canadian and he just got traded to the Raptors.
Yeah. Can you believe that? Were you the one who said it on Twitter about two teams suing each other, making a trade is just weird?
Oh, no, I didn't say that, but I saw a lot of people saying that.
I wish I knew who I first saw that said that, because I was like, yeah, that is weird.
Are the Raptors actually suing back? Are they counter-suing? I didn't even know that. Or is it just them suing the Raptors?
I'm not sure, but there's a lawsuit involved.
Yes. But the guys that were involved in the trade, I heard, are from the same agent.
Oh, interesting.
So, like, that power mm-hmm. of that agent making it happen.
Mm-hmm.
Across these organizations that hate each other.
Huh. I wonder if that's familiar. Okay. We should wrap it up.
Yes.
Because I have a remix game to get to.
Okay. I want to ask you very quickly for a take. It can be very quick.
Oh, I had one.
Do you want me to go first?
Yes, you go first.
Okay, this is my take. This is just like leftover from the holidays. I've been grazing all holidays, like just like, you know, not like eating full meals, just like constantly snacking. The only way out of that is through, because
you just have to eat everything up. So that's anymore.
No, like my body is like, you want a snack, you want a snack, but I don't want a snack. I just like behaviorally, I want a snack because that's what I've been doing for the last couple of weeks. So the only thing I have to do is like, I have to live through like this desire to eat a snack and feel hungry for like, I don't know, 3 or 4 days. And then I'll stop craving random snacks at like 2 p.m. and 3 p.m. and 4 p.m. I just need to go back to like eating a regular lifestyle, and like it'll go away eventually. This like idea that I need to be snacking at all hours.
Okay. Well, I think that you should be able to snack as much as you want, because snacks are delicious.
I just have too many meetings in my regular work day to like snack constantly.
Yeah. Okay, let's see. What is my take? My take is going to be something about all of these former Blazers who are out there doing good things, where I keep talking about how like that wasn't the thing in the past. Okay, no, that's not it. I don't know. My take is something about my trip. Something fun is going to happen. Something fun is going to happen on my trip. That's my take.
A celebrity sighting.
Yeah, something fun's going to happen at one of those games, or maybe both of those games, the Knicks game and the Nets game. So yeah, I don't know. I'm very weak on the takes. You know that. You know this. So I'm just going to take the L this week. And then we're going to take next week off because I'm going to be traveling, and then we will come back and I will try to have 2024 be the year of stronger takes. That's my take. 2024 is going to be the year of stronger takes. From Tara.
I love it. I hope you get to see Spike Lee. That's my hope for you in New York, because he's just kind of like, there's like a couple of NBA icons out there and he's one of them.
Yeah.
Maybe the top one. I don't know if he's the top one. It's like him or Jack or whatever. The fashion guy. James, whatever.
Yeah. I can't wait. Okay. Well, Rose, as always, it's been delightful talking to you. We could do the regular thing. Where can you find me on Twitter? Blah, 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 blah. I'm TCB Biggs. The take is We Have a Take. Rose, where are you?
Rose L. Harding across all platforms and in the We Have a Take Discord.
Thank you, everyone, for listening. And I hope everyone has a great and safe New Year's. And we'll see you next time. Go Blazers!